It's time to get green. Doug Oster and Jessica Walliser are here. All natural, no pesticides, no artificial ingredients. The Organic Gardeners are on KDKA Radio.
When the moon hits your eye. Yeah, like a big pizza pie. That's Doug Oster. He's not here. He's in Italy wrapping up what has been, I'm sure, an incredible vacation. We'll hear all about that next week. But today, Jessica Walliser is here. And also, Miles Stevens will be here. Davy Trees Talking Trees in about 30 minutes. We have a lot to get to on the program. Spring planting season is here. So the number to dial to be on the program is 866-391-1020. Dollar Bank Instant Access. KDKRadio.com, and you can text me on the Wright Automotive line, the best deal in town. We're going to give away a $25 gift certificate right now to Sorgles if you're the 10th caller at 412-922-1020. Jess, good morning. Great to see you again.
Good morning. I'm horticulturist Jessica Walliser. I think Doug might argue with the fact that you said he's on vacation, considering he has 38 people with him touring these gardens that he's leading, but I've seen the pictures that he's posting on Facebook. It looks like a fantastic trip, vacation or not. He was in the gardens at the Vatican, and he shared some pictures of the Colosseum, and apparently he's having a fantastic time, and the weather looks absolutely gorgeous, which is nothing to complain about with all the rain that we've been having.
See, now,
here.
My luck, I would start to weed the Vatican Gardens, and the Pope would come out on the balcony and say, look, that's my favorite flower. What are you doing?
When you go to the Vatican, you shouldn't start weeding.
Yeah, it wouldn't be a good idea.
I don't think they have many weeds in the Vatican Garden. I think they've got a big enough staff to manage those that they would not need
to
step in.
But the question is, you think they're organic?
Well, that's a really good question. I don't know the answer to that.
I got to believe. I bet you they are, more so than not.
I would like to think that they are, but I also think there's this image or need for perfection there, I think, because of all the tourists and things. But you can have perfect without being organic. You can have perfect being organic is what I meant to say, but it's... I don't know. That's a good question.
Now, I know he's been to England, and that's where I would like to go. And you and I were both...
Are we talking the Pope or Doug?
No. Pope. Oh, I'm sure he's been there, too. Got a lot of frequent flyer miles. But we were talking about Miles Standish. We were just discussing this English person who came here many years ago to help the pilgrims. And I've always thought how cool it would be to go to Windsor Castle and see those gardens. Mm-hmm. And from what I understand... They're pretty organic.
They are, yeah. I mean, Prince Charles, actually.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember what the Royal Farm is called there. High Court, I want to say. Anyway, he is 100% organic. They do not use any synthetic chemical fertilizers, herbicides, pesticides in
That's
any of those
cool.
gardens. And they are just absolutely amazing. It is. It's really cool. But here's the thing, that you too, right here in Western Pennsylvania, can have those types of beautiful organic gardens as well. And Melinda and I were talking before I came in here. She asked about the dandelions in her lawn. And I know that this time of year, the dandelions are in full bloom and everybody's in their... You know, the dandelion mode. And here's the deal. Like, okay, so I know that when your neighbor has a green lawn and there's no dandelions, that you maybe think that it's a bad thing that you have dandelions. But the truth is that dandelions are actually very good early pollen source and nectar source for some of our pollinators. And it's not the end of the world that you have some dandelions in your lawn. Having the mixed diversity in there is not problematic. It really does help the turf grass in many cases, just by having that diversity around instead of being a broad monoculture. But if you do want to manage those dandelions either all the way or a little bit, do know that there are organic products that you can do that are absolutely effective that will allow you to avoid the chemical products that really can be quite dangerous, especially to pets and dogs that are out on the lawn, kids out on the lawn. There's organic versions of every one of those synthetic products, and they work very, very well. Number one with your lawn is if you have a lot of dandelions, your lawn is probably compacted. So in the fall, it will be a good time to get it aerated, and you can do it yourself. You can rent the machine to do it, or you can hire a landscaper to come in and aerate the lawn. That often helps. Number two is to get your soil tested in your lawn, because dandelions can also be a sign of nutrient imbalance in your lawn. And so that's an easy fix, because the recommendation when you get the soil test back will tell you what to do to remedy it, to get it in good shape for your lawn. And then third is, instead of putting down that chemical-based weed and feed that gets rid of those dandelions, use an organic version of it. There's a great product called Iron X that uses chelated iron to kill the dandelions and other broadleaved weeds in the lawn. and it is much safer to use. And it's from a company called Gardens Alive. I have used it in small little patch, like a little patch up near the front of our patio, because I wanted to test it and see how well it worked. And it worked very well for me. The excess of iron, of this type of iron, doesn't kill your lawn. It only kills broad-leaved weeds, but it actually serves to help feed the lawn iron. So you're basically killing the broad-leaved weeds with sort of an OD of iron. That being said, in my own garden, I have lots of dandelions. I embrace the violets in my lawn. I don't necessarily embrace the creeping Charlie, but I tolerate the creeping Charlie. I don't mind it in the lawn. I don't like when it comes in the flower beds, but I don't mind it in the lawn. And definitely we should be embracing the clover. I mean, the clover is an excellent nectar source. It's actually a nitrogen source for our lawn. Prior to the 1960s, grass seed was always sold in combination with clover seed. They always mix the two together because the clover, when you mow it, it provides nitrogen to the grass. And so you have a green, lush lawn that is more tolerant of drought and poor soils when you have that clover mixed into it. So that's something you definitely want to leave in the lawn.
So somebody who's starting out because of you and Doug, and I'm sure it's happening every week organically, what's the best way to do it quickly but economically smart too?
Well, I mean, the nice part about organics is in many ways it is more economical. I mean, if you do it the right way, you use your own compost to feed your plants, or you feed them organically derived or naturally derived fertilizer sources. What happens is you become less dependent on all of those chemicals. You're sort of weaning your garden off of the need for them.
Right.
Like, for example, on your lawn, when you're using synthetic fertilizers on your lawn, what happens is your turf grass has a very shallow root system, and it becomes very dependent on you irrigating it. It becomes very dependent on you adding more fertilizers to it. It's sort of like a vicious cycle, right? Whereas when you stop using those products and instead you turn to naturally derived lawn fertilizers, which release slowly, they release their nutrients. And as those products get broken down by the soil microbes, they release them over a longer period of time. So you need less. And when that happens, the roots of the turf grass grow much longer. There's a lot of interesting studies out where they look at the roots of your lawn grass in a lawn that was fertilized with chemical fertilizers and irrigated, and the roots of that grass are only about 3 inches deep. Whereas an organic lawn that's allowed to grow on its own using natural fertilizers, if any at all, and never watered, right? And the roots of those grasses can go up to 3 feet deep. So we're talking about grass that's a lot more resilient. It grows on its own just fine, and it's healthier, and it better gets through drought, and you don't have grub infestations, so you get out of that vicious cycle. So that's the first thing I always recommend to people do. Just stop using the products, turn to more natural ones, and just be patient, because within a year or two, your yard will really become much more resilient.
All right, Jessica Walliser is here. We're going to go to the phones right after the break. Miles Stevens from Davy Trees, talking trees at the bottom of the hour. Melinda Roeder back within 15 minutes, taking another look at local news. We would love to hear from you. We have just a couple of lines available, so the number to dial is 866-391-1020. Dollar Bank, Instant Access, KDKRadio.com. Text me on the Red Automotive Line, best deal in town, and congratulations to Joel from Pittsburgh, winner of that $25 gift certificate from Sorgles.
Doug and Jessica teach you how to keep it green. The Organic Gardeners are on KDKA Radio.
All right, Mal Stevens is in the building. Davy Trees talking trees within 20 minutes. And we are going to start off by going to Marie, calling today from Beaver for Jessica Walliser. This is the Organic Gardeners on KDKA Radio. Hi, Marie.
Hi, good morning. Yes, I have several questions. I'll try to keep them short because one's a tree question. Maybe I'll just text you. But anyway, I bought a farm several years ago and finally started building. The lawn was put in, and I have beds around the house. I've seen what happens with these beds because it's been in process for a year. They grow 6 foot weeds. It's just amazing. Those tall kind with the red berries on them, and some of these weeds have root systems that are a foot deep. So I'm being told, listen, you have to spray these beds with a chemical to keep the weeds down, or use fabric. Neither of which I really want to do. So my question to you is, with this new construction, I should tell you, the topsoil they told me is really nice topsoil. It came from the farm. It's nice, rich soil. So I'm just getting started. Nothing's been done. I have these bare beds, and I need help. What I should do to prepare them before I start putting in trees and shrubs?
Yep. So first of all, you're very smart to ask before you get started, because a lot of times we start beds and we think we have to do them a certain way, and then they end up and we end up in worse trouble than we started with. So I'm glad you asked this question before you got started with it. You do not need to spray those weeds, and you do not need to turn to chemicals to get those beds managed. What I want to ask you first, though, is are you going to be planting shrubs in them, or are you going to be doing perennials, or a combination of both?
Combo. I'd like to do more perennials just because of the main, you know, the lower maintenance.
Okay, but not so many shrubs? There's no shrubs going in there?
I will be doing some. The other thing I will have, as you all talk about, I will have the deer problem. I have a herd that lives in the field.
Yeah,
so.
Okay. All right, so plant selection matters to you, of course. I mean, you want to pick things that are resistant to deer. But as far as making those beds or establishing those beds are concerned, I would make sure that you get some good high-quality compost in there. And even though you said it's very good topsoil, you can never go wrong with adding a little more compost to the area. So I would add some compost to the area. And as you're doing that, I would dig in, try to get out any roots of any perennial weeds that you find in there. I would not till those beds, because if you have something like Canada thistle in there or some other weeds with a really tenacious root system, that if you chop it up, it's going to actually make more weeds. So I wouldn't recommend that you till it, but I would recommend that you get in there, and if you see any new weeds poking up, try to dig those out as best as you can. Get that compost down. Then what I would do is I would cover the whole area with 10 sheets thick of newspaper. And avoid the glossy inserts like the Walmart flyers and things like that, but you can use any of the matte newsprint, 10 sheets thick over the whole area, and then cover that. If you're just doing shrubs and perennials, you can use like a triple shredded bark on chips on there, mulch on there to cover up and hold that newspaper in place. Then when you go to plant your shrubs and your perennials in there, you just clear away a little bit of the mulch in the planting area, cut a hole in the newspaper, and plant the plant down through that hole, and then put the mulch back in place. And that way, then, that newspaper will form a protective barrier over the soil. And then every year, I would go in there, and I would make like a lasagna. Put down more newspaper on top, and you'll the next year, you'll have to work it around the base of those plants with some more shredded bark mulch on top. And eventually, those weeds and weed seeds will be buried so deeply that you won't have to deal with them anymore. And you're building layers up on top instead of digging down in.
What kind of compost would you recommend?
Well, I get the leaf compost. I don't know what community you're in. Sometimes the different communities will give away the compost that's made from the leaves that they collect. That's good stuff for you to use. You can also buy compost from a landscape supply company. Like sometimes leaf mold is what I like to use. And that's a good one to use. If you're just using small areas, you can also buy bagged compost from your local garden center as well.
Yeah, these are large areas. I'll have to have it delivered.
Yeah.
This will be a lot of work for all the beds that I have.
Yeah, so. You know what? Trust me, I feel you, because when we moved into our house, I did just a few beds every year and kept expanding out. But now the thing about that newspaper technique is if you add a new layer of newspaper and then mulch on top every year, in 3 years from now, you will have the most wonderful soil and you will have zero weeds. Like I do that mulch in the spring in all of my gardens, and I don't weed the entire summer long. And people think that I'm like making that up, but I do not. The only thing I have to do is the creeping Charlie comes in from the lawn. And so I do have to pull that out from the edge of the bed. But other than that, my gardens do not have to be weeded because I've constantly had this layer put on, and it works very, very well.
All right, 866-3-9-1-10-20, Dollar Bank, Instant Access, KDKRadio.com. Text me on the Red Automotive Line, best deal in town. A couple of minutes away from the news break, so we're going to hold our callers until then. If you have a question specifically about a tree, you're going to want to call us right now, because Mal Stevens coming up with Davey Trees Talking Trees in just a couple of moments. 866-3-9-1-10-20, Dollar Bank, Instant Access, KDKRadio.com. Text me on the Red Automotive Line, best deal in town. So what do you think we're going to be talking to Miles about today? A lot of stuff in the world.
I know what we're going to be talking to him about planting, how to plant. This is a great time of year to plant trees, but there is an art to planting a tree, and that's what we're going to talk to Miles about. If you head to my Facebook page or my Twitter feed, you'll see a picture of a tree that was planted very wrong. So it is not the way that we're going to teach you how to plant trees. I did not do it. I came across it in a parking lot at a hospital the other day, and I almost started crying for this poor tree. Like, it was just everything about the way this tree was planted was wrong. So you'll get to see a bad example of it on social media, but we'll talk about a great example and great way to do it here today.
So go out and hug a tree today, ladies and gentlemen.
You should hug a tree every day. It was Arbor Day the other day, too. You mean you weren't out there hugging trees?
I hug trees every day.
Okay,
actually,
that's
how I start my day. Sometimes I've woke up in a tree, but that's another topic. But, you know, Beaver, PA, where Marie was from, that's like big arbor country, isn't it?
I think it might be a tree city USA. Like, there's a lot. We're very lucky in Pittsburgh. We have a lot of older neighborhoods that take great pride in their large established trees that sort of line the streets, and even, you know, neighborhoods like Squirrel Hill and Shadyside and out where I live, and with just these beautiful big street trees are gorgeous.
I love trees. Okay, listen, we're going to take a short break.
Doug and Jessica teach you how to keep it green. The Organic Gardeners are on KDKA Radio.
Yes, they are. Right now, we're going to take the 10th caller, win a $25 gift certificate from Janoski's. The number to dial is 412-922-1020.
And now it's time for Talking Trees, a service of the Davey Tree Expert Company.
And today we have arborist Miles Stevens with us from the Davey Tree Expert Company, and we are going to tell you all how to plant a tree. As I mentioned before the break, I happened to be in a medical facility the other day, and I got out of the car, and I looked at this. I felt so bad for this tree. It was planted in all the wrong ways, and I posted a picture to it on my social media this morning because I wanted to show everybody an example of how not to plant a tree. But Miles is going to talk to us today about how to plant a tree. So, Miles, welcome back to KDK Radio, and let's talk how to plant trees.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks for having me back.
So where do we get started? Let's start actually with the hole size. When you're digging the hole, what do you do?
Should be three times the diameter of the root ball. You know, so many times I see where people are like trying to slide a peg just in a pole barely big enough. It really should be three times the diameter and doesn't need to be deeper than the root ball. But the important thing is to be three times the diameter. So what you're going to allow that tree to do is to have a root system that will expand out through that. And also want to, you know, cut the burlap at the base. So many times I see
Wait. I got another question about the hole here.
Okay.
So no deeper than the root ball is.
Right? Yes, correct.
So do you have to take a tape measure out there? Do you, like, how do you know? Or do you just eyeball it?
Probably safest way to be absolutely certain would be to take a tape measure, you know, because try to eyeball it. Sometimes you think you're right on, but you're not. It can be deceiving that way. So yes, tape measure. Three times the diameter, no deeper than the root ball.
Okay, so you're loosening it. You're loosening the soil, basically, so the roots.
Yes.
And that's whether the tree is potted or bald and burlapped, matter what.
Three times. Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So then, let's say we do have a bald and burlapped one, right, where the has the metal cage on it, wrapped in burlap, tied up with twine.
Right.
What do I do?
I'll cut the twine. Be the first thing I would do. A lot of times I see that's left on. Cut
all
the twine.
All of it. Everything comes off. Okay.
The twine. Then peel the burlap on back. The cage. I don't necessarily think you have to take the entire cage off. I'd say the upper two-thirds, take that off. Maybe leave that bottom part of the cage there. It sort of helps hold the root ball together. Because what you have to be concerned with sometimes, those root balls are real tight. They won't fall apart. Other ones you go peel back, and then the root ball starts falling apart. That leads to other situations where you probably want to stake the tree, which I think you were sort of alluding to in your picture, how that was improperly done. But peel all that back, you know, then we recommend, you know, typically just the soil that you excavate around to create that, to put that back into the hole for that tree. So the tree's going to grow into that. You know, it has to learn to adjust to that site anyhow. So just put that soil back in there. But if you have clumps, obviously break that up, try to make it a little more workable.
Okay, so when we take all the burlap and the twine off, do we put the plant in the hole before we take all that off? Or do you? Okay.
I would take it because it's much easier once you're going to handle, like I said, that sometimes you might be able to do, you know, take it off before you put it in the hole, but sometimes those root balls just fall apart and then all of a sudden you've got a whole other issue.
Okay, so it's best to put it in the hole first. Then take all the stuff around from the outside of it, including the top third of the cage, you said? Two thirds of the cage. Two thirds of the cage. And then we're backfilling with the native soil that came out of the hole, not adding anything to it, which I know is a big no-no because you want those roots to adjust to the native soil really quickly, right? So what happens if you get it in the hole, right, and you start doing all this, and then you realize it's not deep enough or it's too deep?
That's why you want to check before you start taking them off to see where, you know, once again, if you have a measuring, like a yardstick where you can put against the root ball, then you have another, you take tape measure, you run it across and see, am I too shallow? Did I dig it too deep? Do I need to put a little bit of soil back in there? So, yeah, don't take the burlap, don't take any of that off till you're certain that you have that at just the right planting depth.
And here's a question I get from people all the time. So when I tell them to just put the soil back in that came out of the hole, right? Refill. And they say, oh, but it's terrible. It's all clay or it's all rocks or it's all whatever, whatever, right? It doesn't matter, right? There's no reason, even if it is just rocks. I mean, that's what trees grow in.
Well, and it all goes back to, you know, at some point in time, those roots, they're going to move out of that root ball. They have to, the tree has to, is going to have to grow in that site anyhow. And even if you dig that hole, excuse me, to three times, eventually those roots get outside that planting area. So it's best for that plant to become adjusted, you know, to the growing site. It's going to be onto the soil. It's going to be on, yeah. You know, and so better off just to backfill. Then I would say what you want to make sure you do too when you're, you know, when you're digging that hole, when you get to the outer edge of that, good idea to sort of break up that soil at the edge. You know, don't leave it glazed, you know, when you're digging it, you know, because that can create sort of an interface there for the roots, a little difficult. So in that outer part of your planting hole, you know, sort of break that up too.
Okay.
So it makes it easier for the roots to penetrate through those.
So you could use like a cultivator or a garden claw or something to sort of rough it up a little bit.
Yeah, rough it up a little bit so a better chance those roots to get out, you know, into there. And so it's not like a glaze, which is more difficult for those roots to get through.
So then mulching. We should also do that at the time of planting too, right?
Yes, mulching. The idea there is, moisture conservation, some soil temperature modification, because that provides sort of a layer there. So you're preventing direct sunlight onto the soil. Also preventing, direct when it rains, you know, that breaks up that rainfall a little bit. You know, that direct contact on the soil, as it breaks up, can cause some erosion, that type of thing. So the mulching helps in a couple different ways for us.
But it's never piled up against the trunk of the tree, right?
Well, it's the best thing. The way I look at mulching is like a saucer, coffee saucer. You know, it's narrow at the base of the tree. It can be a little more at the edges, but you know, no more than 2 inches and 4 inches at the very outside. Yeah, it shouldn't be like a mulch volcano.
Yeah, don't make a volcano. Make a donut, right?
Right, exactly, yeah.
And then you did mention real quickly about you getting a lot of questions this time of year about the lichens growing on the sides of trees or moss.
Right, right. And then, you know, we've seen a lot the last couple of years, especially last year. We had all the rain and constant moisture, and people were worried that it's going to damage the tree, going to, you know, some sort of parasitic type activity.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't hurt the tree. It's more of an indication of how much moisture, how much, you know, like last year, I don't know how much we ended up above average rainfall. I mean, I had a client in Mount Lebanon that had a very sophisticated weather station. He had 70 inches of rain last year.
Wow.
You know, so way above high moisture, you know, moss and lichen, they're just looking for a place to hang out. They don't draw energy away. I mean, think about it. You have moss and lichen grow in stone and brick.
Yep.
So obviously they're not looking for nutrients anywhere. Sometimes they're looking for a place to hang out and get moisture or whatever. So no major concerns as far as plants, you know, your trees with moss and lichen. We get a couple of dry years in a row, you might see it dissipate and you'll see less of it. But
nothing to worry about.
Nothing to worry about.
Great. Well, as always, Miles, thank you so much for joining us today on the program. We always appreciate having the Davy True Cree crew come in here and answer all of our tree questions. And I hope you'll stick around for a couple of minutes because we do have a couple of calls here as well. And so we want to make sure that people get to talk to you with their tree questions. So for more information about Davy Tree and to ask what's going on with your trees, go to davy.com/KDKA. And don't forget, you can always call the experts at Davy Tree at 855-982-TREE. That's 855-982-8733.
Congratulations to Jenny from Baden, Pennsylvania, winner of that gift certificate from Janoski's, Mrs. Know-It-All Around the Bend, your phone calls and more with Miles Stevens from Davy Trees as we continue on The Organic Gardeners with Jessica Walliser on KDKA Radio.
Doug and Jessica teach you how to keep it green. The Organic Gardeners are on KDKA Radio.
All right, it is time to welcome one of our favorites. Go ahead, Jess.
It is our Denise Schreiber. Welcome to our Mrs. Know-It-All. She is a horticulturist, garden writer, and our own garden goddess. Hey, Denise, how are you?
Good. I'm down here at Seven Springs today because I'm speaking a little later at their Home and Garden Show.
Oh, I didn't know they have a Home and Garden Show out there. That's pretty cool.
It's the first year for them.
Oh, well,
so,
what...
I'm going to be doing my urban myths and legends in the garden talk, which is always really popular with everybody.
So what's the one urban myth and legend that surprises the most people when you give that talk?
Well, actually, there's two. One is planting by the moon. People plant, whether it's the root crops or whatever. You cannot accurately reproduce those conditions year to year, whether it's the soil temperature, the pH of your soil, the moon, the amount of moisture in the ground. It's okay if you want to do it, but you could dance around the moon naked and it won't make a bit of difference.
So when Doug says plant your garlic under the dark of the moon, right, which is the dark phase of the moon, and let's say he is out there frolicking as he does this garlic, it's not going to matter to the
that's
success.
That's not a visual I want. Yeah. That's not a visual I need.
Especially not this early.
Yeah, let's just hope it's a real dark moon so nobody can see anything. All right, Mrs. Know-It-All, thank you. Let's take this call now for Miles. You've been very patient. Here's Brad. Brad, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good this morning. I had a tree question, though. I've used oak trees in my property here. There's one here. It's about almost five foot across. It's got a split in it, and I was going to ask a tree man if it would be okay to maybe take some of the weight off of it and take some of the stress off of it. Maybe that would help it a little bit.
That's difficult to say without seeing the tree. Sometimes we can get a situation where there is some vertical damage, and we can bolt and cable. The concern right now is, though, the time of year. We want to be very cautious about doing any pruning or injuring a tree. I mean, obviously, if it's a safety concern, I may want to try to do something. It's really difficult to say without seeing the tree and how the extent of the damage. I mean, if it is something that's workable, we have put bolts through cables, to try to secure that. But that has to be, your best idea there would be a certified arborist out to take a look and give you some advice. Because by the other hand, it might be a situation where it's not really salvageable. But in certain situations, we can protect and extend the longevity of that tree.
And I think that's important to point out, especially since Brad's calling about an oak and oak wilt, and how critical it is this time of year that we not do any pruning or damage oak trees in any way because of the spread and the transmission of oak wilt with the little beetle that does the transmission.
Right.
It's attracted to the injury site, and that can help spread the disease. So, Brad, for sure, I would recommend you giving Davy Tree a call and having one of the arborists come out and take a look. It doesn't cost anything to have them assess it, and they'll be able to say whether or not they can cable it or save it in some way, or if it's something that you should really just have taken out because of that.
All right, listen, we've got a Dollar Bank instant access question, and we're down to just a couple of minutes left in the program. So let's get to at least this one. It says, after testing soil last spring and amending pH last year, this year I have been overrun with a white flower weed that appears to be a chickweed, despite corn gluten about a month ago. It also is in any open garden soil not covered by last fall's leaves. I've been manually pulling him out in the garden. What should I do with this lawn chickweed? Love the show.
Yeah, so it probably, if it's already bloomed, it's probably not chickweed. Our chickweed hasn't quite come into flower yet. What you're probably seeing is bittercress, which is a white-flowered weed as well. The reason why the corn gluten meal hasn't worked with chickweed is because chickweed is a winter annual, which means it germinates in the fall, and it lives as a teeny tiny little seedling through the winter, and then it puts on this rosette of growth and flowers the following year. So when you put that corn gluten meal down, it had already germinated. So the trick with those types of weeds is to actually do two applications of corn gluten meal, and one of them has to be in the fall, usually in early October, and that will help prevent that chickweed or that bittercress in future years. Remember, the organic gardeners always aim to teach you how to create a better place to garden and a safer place to live.
Great show.
Thanks.
Come back again, Miles.
Okay, thank you, Rob.
Standish.
Thanks, no, it's Miles Stevens.
I know.
Come on.
If we could have Miles Standish here, that would be a heck of a
show. That would be a real feat, wouldn't it?
All right, listen. So are you organic? Because when you come to your gardening, Mr. Standish? All right.